This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello, everybody. Again, this is Martin Spriggs with Wells Tech, episode 370 for Tuesday, December 2nd, 2014, a show about technology, ministry, where those two meet. Happy that you are joining us today and decided one more time to join the Wells Tech crew and figure out what it is that in the technology world that might assist you in your either professional or personal ministries. Special show today, we have our educational technology focused show, and as a result, I don't just have one lovely lady with me, I have two. So Sally, thanks for joining once again. How are you?
I am awesome. Happy New Year. That's Happy New Church Year. We have made it to December and celebrated Advent 1 yesterday, and what a blessing to prepare our hearts for the coming of our Savior.
Absolutely.
So, welcome.
And Gail Potratz is joining us. Gail is our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, a long title, and she's worth every letter. Hi, Gail.
Hello. Good to be here again. It seems like a long time since we've
it has been a long time. Yeah, that Jason Schmidt jumps in there once in a while, so that skips a month for you now. But we're really happy that you're able to join us again. Thanks for doing that.
Yep, happy to learn from you this week, Gail. Way back in February, we talked some with Tyler Shattuck, who is from Concordia University in Wisconsin, and he told us a little bit about the concept of implementing badges in the classroom, and we wanted to circle back to that topic this month because since we talked, apparently you've done it in real life, and so we are excited to hear about your experience with badges there at Emmanuel in New London.
Well, I am certainly no expert. I am finding my way through the first year, but convinced that it's a very valuable tool in education. I was able to work with Concordia on a college class in which we did badges, and that kind of motivated me, got me thinking. And my badge system for grade school, grades 5 through 8, I implemented this year in the language arts area. So my badges consist of badges that have to do with different writing styles, different writing activities, as well as quarterly reading goals that we implement.
So, Gail, rewind a little bit for us. There's probably some people who didn't listen to that show or watch that show. What are badges? What are digital badges?
Digital badges are a type of authentic assessment, an assessment that's done without letter grades. So the idea is that a badge is something that has a certain set of criteria with it, criterion that go with it, certain skills, certain levels of performance of a skill, and if you meet all the criterion that the badge creator has laid out for you, then you are awarded the badge as a method to assess your growth in a certain area.
So it kind of harkens back to our those of us that are Wells through and through our pioneer days, where you would get some kind of something that you could pin on and wear that would show some kind of, kind of accomplishment. Now, when we're talking about badges today, they're digital. So that's maybe like, for those of you familiar with Foursquare, you know, you're checking in, and I checked in at a Mexican restaurant 10 times, you know, in the past month. That means I get the hot tamale badge. These are a little bit more earned, but no less fun, and I think that's probably the appeal, right, for kids that age?
Hopefully they're motivating. I don't think grades are motivating to some people, but the people they're not motivating for are the people I'm really trying to reach, which is most of the kids in a classroom, because not everybody can just do these things. If you can just automatically do them and you're just collecting things right and left, I guess that's good. But what I'm trying to do is, okay, everybody needs to know how to write a paragraph. Okay, some kids on the first day of school could come in there and successfully do that. But some kids, it may take them till halfway through the year. So rather than failing 15 times before they get a C and then maybe never get higher than that, but they pass, so they get a C in paragraph writing finally, it's more motivating to kids when they have something to work toward. It's all laid out. This is what you have to do to accomplish this. I will help you work on these things to get there. And then eventually they get there, but you know, they don't receive a letter grade, so it isn't so defeating like, you know, getting 13 F's in a row before you finally succeed. So I think that alone keeps them more motivated because it's a more positive way to approach it. So,
and I think the way you're describing it, Gail, perhaps might make you ease into going this way, because it sounds a lot like rubrics, and I'm guessing
right.
a lot of teachers are using rubrics now where
right.
you know, you have levels of achievement all laid out for the students in your rubric, and then
right.
you associate badges as they progress through those levels.
Right. It's a logical step from a person who uses rubrics to a person who can write criteria for a badge. That's right. That's right. And I still do use rubrics with my writing assignments besides the badge criterion, because my rubrics are much more detailed and they'll give a lot more help than badges are meant to be. I don't want to say vague, but they're not as finely detailed as some things might
broader.
Be. Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Do you find the students know how they're doing? I mean, is it as true an assessment in their own mind, saying, hey, I can compare this to where I was and where I am now, so there's improvement, but how much improvement?
I think they definitely can, because the criterion are written in such a way so they know exactly what's expected in that. So if they don't quite reach that, and so that one is marked lower on the rubric, then they don't get that. You know, we have a conversation, and they know exactly what they're working on. I have my kids also, these badges are they show up on their portfolios. That's where they show up. That's where they collect them, okay? So, and then they have to write about them. They write about their work. So the things that we attach to their portfolio, I teach them how to reflect on their work. So they'll be, it takes a while, but they get very good at saying, okay, this part of the criterion, I never get this. I don't know. I can't write a conclusion to save my soul. So they know what they do well, and they know what they need to keep working on. And to me, that's really valuable, because I think if you give a kid a B, a lot of grading is, especially in writing, it's pretty subjective sometimes. So they don't have a clue what they need to tackle. I think this shows them much more detail and gives them a better plan for success.
She said they display these on their portfolio. What do you mean by that? Is that an electronic?
Well, let me show you. If I can share my screen, I can show you that. All right.
And describe it for our listening audience.
I will, if I can get to it here. Okay. All right, that's not what I want to be showing. Okay. Can you see that now?
Yep, e-portfolio.
All right, so this is an example of a student's portfolio. This is just the stuff they wrote, their introduction. But down here, one of the tabs is badges. So this is their collection of badges. During the first quarter, this person got a badge in paragraph writing. So if you click on this badge, you will see the criterion that has to be met in order for that person to be awarded this badge. Okay.
So this is just a Google site that you're using.
Yeah.
As,
yes.
And each student has their own Google site?
Right. They each have a portfolio, and it was a template, you know, that I made. So, and they then have personalized it.
And then the badges, are those just images you're sharing with them?
Yep, those are just images I'm sharing. I'll explain to you, that's one of my dilemma that I just started to try to find a solution for. Because basically I'm just copying and pasting this in here and dating them as they're, you know, as they're getting them. this little link down here, now I've just investigated doing something else. And I'll show you that in a minute. But if we were on this portfolio for this person, this is their collection of badges, but they would also have, like, let's go back to the first quarter tab. Okay, these are the assignments that were posted and written about during the first quarter. And then they also repost their badges. And now this time when they put them here, they link them so they go to their artifact. This is what they got the badge. This is the piece of writing that demonstrates their success at meeting those criteria. So they put that together when they work on their portfolio. And then they write underneath here what it was they had to do to get the badge. It's kind of redundant in a way, but I make them do this because it's good for them to be redundant at this point so they get a better feel for what we're doing here. So you could already get this under the badge criterion on the last page, but here it is again. So these are two writing samples, and then this is the AR first quarter badge. That's the reading badge. So this is what it would look like. And so there's a lot of cutting and pasting to get these things in place. So what I just started doing just this week, because it's kind of putzy. It takes a lot of time for me, and then not so much for them, because they only have themselves to take care of, not, you know, 46 kids or whatever. So now I started thinking that maybe I would do something different this time, and this time instead of showing the badges in the way that I had showed them down here, I went to Credly. Credly.com is where I make the badges, and that's a site where you can collect your badges. So they now have an account on Credly, and this link I'm thinking about, I just put it here to show you guys today because this is a different way you could do it. If you go to badges here, yeah, see this takes you to their site, but then you have to log in. I've been playing around with it to see if I could get it to hold, you know, because what it would do is it would show you, see if I can sign in.
So their badges would be housed on Credly, and you would just have a link, yeah, basically to those badges. So.
Right. They already are. It's just that I hadn't had them. I wasn't sure I wanted to have them do it this way, but it's becoming obvious to me that it's got to be this way for ease. But I haven't found a good way to... Here's his badges that he's earned. The reading one isn't in there. Huh. Oh, I know, because I was just fooling around with this today. That's right. This is him, but, yeah, this is his account. It's not complete.
So this would enable, if you used a service like this, this could cross different classes and different educators,
right,
as well.
What's nice is I just signed into my site, and then when I want to award something, mm-hmm, I can give credit very easily because I have all my kids' names in here. So if I want to give credit, I can't do it this way, I guess. I'm in Peyton's site instead of mine. If I was in mine, see, I could just create their credit from here. So it makes it a lot easier than just cutting and pasting and putting it all in the e-portfolio that way. But I haven't found a good way to really show this on their portfolio where, you know, because they have to log in to their site, I can't get it to show where I want it to. So I'm still fooling around with it.
Okay. Credly is, I think, a service we've talked about in the past, and it is kind of created, or it tries to enable classroom use, right? It enables students,
right,
to sign up without too much issue.
Right. See, here I am in my account, and if I was in my account, I could type this little girl's name in here. I typed her name in here. Let's go to Peyton again just to show you. I've done him recently, so his name is rather, well, not strange, but not too many of them. So he comes up in my list here, and so I can then go down to here. I can add a testimonial. I can talk about him, and I can add his evidence there. I can link to his piece right there. Mm-hmm. So you'd be able to see this. It's kind of neat when you look at their badges, because you can just, and here's all the criterion that shows up over here, tells you who the issuer is. It's really pretty neat. When
and
you go,
get notified.
Yep, he gets an email. And when he goes into his badges, like this badge, if he clicks, he can manage things here. He can click on the paragraph, and he gets, again, all of the details that go with it. And you can also link to his artifact from here, too. Whoops. I'm getting lost now. Earned.
So you need to figure out some embed code is what you need.
Yeah.
So you can figure it out.
Something like that, yeah. So now, see, you can see his evidence right here, too. Mm-hmm. So you could go to his. If I clicked on this, it would go to his paragraph again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all pulled together really nicely in there. That's what I like about it.
So, Gail, when you go through this, and I know you're just kind of in the beginning stages of this, what happens at report card time when you actually have to translate this in a real grade?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm still playing around with it, because I just wish we could just throw out grades all together, but nobody's buying that. Well, what I've gone to doing now is in PowerSchool, I have a column for paragraph writing, for comparison writing, for how-to writing. And then as kids get their badge, I put an A in that column. So they're not penalized if they don't get it. There's just a blank, which doesn't count for anything. So they're rewarded with an A in that if they get that. And then maybe that won't happen again until next quarter. Next quarter I'll have those same things again. And the idea is by the end of the year, somewhere along the line, they'll get that A, which really in the big scope of all the grades and everything doesn't count for that much, you know. I think the process is more important than that one letter grade that goes in the book. But that is truly a concern. Kids are pretty trained to expect letter grades. Parents are pretty trained to expect letter grades. So there is a lot of education of both of those groups of people when you do something like this, too. And I'm sure some of them don't like it, probably, you know.
So what has the feedback been from the kids?
The kids like it. I haven't heard any kids that don't like it. They go for it. But I think some parents are very grade-oriented, especially the parents of the kids who always get A's. They like that. I think the people who struggle a little more see what I'm trying to do here and how I'm trying to not penalize kids for the point in which they finally reach that goal. You know, because the point is, And truly, you know, writing is subjective. Everybody's paragraph is not going to be equally as eloquent, but that's why in the criterion, you know, you just have to include, okay, what is a paragraph? Can you do a paragraph? There's going to be some kids that have a lot of misspelled words in there, and that's hard for me because I'd like for it to all be perfect, but you really have to limit what you're trying to get them to do. You just always encourage them to, of course, do the editing and everything too. But that doesn't necessarily belong in the badge at every point along the way.
Okay. So you've had a quarter of this, coming up on a whole semester of it.
Yep.
Are there things you would do differently? Are there any big mistakes that you made?
The only thing I would do differently is just the idea of how I can manage it better. You know, I'd like to really get the thing with Credly to work so I could just deal with it on a website and link the kids and their parents on the portfolio to the website rather than pasting that stuff all in. I think it looks kind of neat pasted in. We did a nice job of making it look good and do the job. It's just that it is kind of, you know, time consuming and putzy. So for my sake, I would like to speed it up.
So, automate the process.
Really, yeah, right. But that's really the only thing. I'm convinced of the worth of doing it. Definitely. So I'm going to stick with it.
Anyone else in your school considering badges? Or?
I don't think so.
No?
No.
They're happy to let you blaze that trail, mm-hmm. huh?
I think some things do lend themselves to it a little bit more easily, too. Like, I'm not sure how you'd do that in math. You know, there's probably a way, but, you know, math is such an everyday we do kind of the same thing, you know. I don't know.
I've seen some programs explained or blogged about, and they allow the students to go different directions, like a more of an elective kind of method where they can choose which badges they want to work
yep.
toward or whatever, where you have some variety for them to choose from.
Right. If I could get my act together, that's ultimately what I think would be the best thing to do. I'm just always getting different grades, so I'm constantly developing new material. So I never get to a point where I have it organized well enough to know that, okay, comparison writing works well with this story. And, you know, it's hard to pull that all together. But that would be my ultimate goal, too, is to not tell them that this is the day we have to do this, but lay it all out and let them pick the order in which they want to accomplish those things. Definitely. Yep. That's
cool.
Another step in management.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Good. Well, it's encouraging to get a start and see, you know, kick the tires a little bit, see how it goes, and you'll never know if this is a valuable approach or technique until you truly put it into practice. So we'll be when we get you back on again, we'll get an update as well.
Okay.
All right, great. We had planned on talking a little bit about online assessment. We'll save that for another day. I think badges in general are a very intriguing topic for a lot of people, so we will have to see how that goes, and we'll put a link to the appropriate resources that Gail had mentioned in the show notes. So let's move on to our ministry resources section.
And Martin, it is Advent time, so I thought it would be appropriate to seek out some ministry resources around that special time in the church year. And what I've found for you is from the YouVersion Bible. I think we've talked about on the show before that our friends over at Time of Grace Ministries there in Milwaukee have many different Bible reading plans, devotional kind of series shared through YouVersion. And YouVersion is a very popular Bible. You can get it online. You can get it on all your different mobile devices. You can log in and sync your notes across all those different platforms. And you can follow a reading plan across all those different platforms as well. So I specifically want to include a link in today's show notes to the Prepare Your Heart Christmas Devotions. And it's a series of 15 devotions that are from Time of Grace Ministry, specifically around preparing your heart for the Christ child. And so there's an example here you can see, or you can just click to start the plan, and it'll have you save that to your account and keep up with each of the days that you're doing the devotion series, give you new devotion materials and Bible readings to go along with that. So this is one in particular that would be beneficial for this time of year. And, you know, it's great to have these and to know about this personally, but perhaps our Wells Techers could share this, perhaps just share a link to it via Facebook if you want to do that for your own personal outreach efforts, or, you know, include a link on your church website or in your church bulletin if someone's looking for a devotion series. This would be a good one to recommend. So,
yeah, I've been enjoying the Time of Grace devotion or Bible reading plans in YouVersion each day. I'm using one right now called Who is God? Just a real quick, it takes all of about 60 seconds to read through it, and a sense of accomplishment that you can check it off and share that you read it. It's kind of a way to encourage others. I've shared some of the lessons or some of the devotions with other people, and they've appreciated them as well. So all kinds of good stuff from Time of Grace on YouVersion if you're looking for a Bible reading plan, just real quick, bite-sized kinds of things. So.
Sounds like you should earn a badge for doing that.
Not for reading the Bible.
No. Okay.
All right, let's move on to news in tech.
Yeah, interestingly, I ran across an article. Let's see if I can share my screen one more time. This one from our friends over at Microsoft and their Office blogs. I believe yesterday they announced that they are no longer doing clip art in Microsoft Office. I thought that was interesting. I think clip art has been along for the ride since the beginning of Microsoft Office, but they are opting out of the clip art business in lieu of the Bing image search. And they've basically put into Bing the ability to filter down based on Creative Commons licensing. So they'll bring it up for you and show you things that are in the public domain or with different licensing, allowing you to modify or share and use different licensing for your image searches. So another move toward the cloud and toward web-based resources where they don't want to maintain their own separate clip art library, but now are just expecting you to use Bing instead.
Yeah.
Interesting
what I like,
change.
Yeah, what I like about what they're doing is a lot of the images that you see there have a kind of a cutout background or a white background, so it's easy to put them like in a PowerPoint or Keynote without kind of having the, you know, the square look. So you can find images in that PNG format that have that transparent background. That's kind of nice.
It is nice. Yep, work plays well with all your different image needs.
So how do you get to this? Do you just go to Bing and just use it as you would Google?
Well, you certainly could do that, but what they're saying is that the Office
right within the Office suite.
Within the Office suite, when you look for images, which is a function in the ribbon available in Microsoft Office, it's actually just going to default to be in a Bing image search with that Creative Commons licensing applied.
Right.
Yep. Integrated right there.
All right. That's our news and tech segment. On to our ever popular tips and picks of the week. Gail, you're our guest this week. Do you have a pick?
I do. Sally let me have two. Is that still true, Sally?
That's true. You're special.
All right. One's a very short one, and I just think it's something that everybody should know. So I'm going to share my screen again and show you that if you are... Okay, here we go. If you are in your favorite Google Plus, for a long time when I first started using Google Plus, I was like, I want to save that post. I want to come back to that. And, you know, they populate so quickly, it's hard to come back to them. So how do you save it? So what you need to do if you like to save your favorite posts from all of your communities that you belong to in Google Plus is... you need an extension called what's in the notes. My favorite Google
favorite post. Favorite post for Google Plus. It's
favorite
called.
Post for Google Plus. So mm-hmm. if you search for that in the store, in the Chrome Web Store, you can find that. And then after you install that, what it does is every one of your posts that show up will have this little star as an available. Item down at the bottom. So if you like that post, you simply click on it. It becomes yellow. And then when you go over here, you have in your column your list of favorites. And that is where they are all collected. So you can always come back to your favorites from any community that you belong to. They will be saved for you in that spot. And I wasn't sure if everybody was aware of that. It took me a while to find out where that was. So I figured somebody else might be listening that would be helpful too. So.
That's a nice addition because if you just plus one it or like it,
yeah.
it doesn't help you because you can't really find those again. This is more of a bookmarking feature.
Exactly. That's a good name for it, bookmarking. It even has the little star.
Right.
So that's exactly it.
Okay.
Yeah, and
okay.
I sure didn't know that, so that's a good extension
how
to add to my
collection. How do you use Google Plus, Gail? What's your, how do you normally, how do you find it useful?
Well, I use the Wells Google.
The Google Schools one?
Yep. I use that a lot because I ask people things there or try to answer people's questions there both ways.
Is that fairly active?
That's got about 160 members now.
Okay.
And yes, it is fairly active. And sometimes more than others. But yes, it is an active community. And then I belong to, well, I belong to a badge community and many other, you know, Chromebook and Google and Apple and all those kind of things. And so, you know, they all come through, and there's a lot of things I'd like to save. I learn a lot of things there. I find that since I've become a more, a bigger Google Plus user, I'm less of a Twitter user. I don't know. I find a lot of things there. I put out for help there when I need it, and I get responses. I think it's cut down on my Twitter use because I use more Google Plus.
Yeah, that's a great tip. I think when you're embarking in a new technology like you are with badges, that might not be a bad step to take, is to try and find a community where you can absorb, you know, some of the knowledge there, and then have a resource for question asking. So.
Exactly.
Great.
Okay, and I'll tell you my other tip right away is, since you were talking about Microsoft, Microsoft compatibility with Google, which has increased tremendously lately. So if you happen to get a document, here's my fake attachment here. If someone sends you a Microsoft Word document in your email as an attachment, or if you just have one on your desktop, it'll work too. You can now open it, edit it, and share it back to the person without ever even opening any Microsoft product. So that is pretty cool. And here's how you do it. When this little thing comes up in your attachment, instead of downloading it or putting it into your drive, you just click on it, and so it opens up, and you tell it at the top, I already did this one once, so I'm not sure when I was practicing, but you tell it to open with Google Docs, which I already did, so there it is. Okay, so it is already, well, I'll see what happens if I do it again. It opens in Google Doc, and then, or maybe not.
There.
Oh, it's because I already did it. It's because I already did it.
Shoot. So the concept is you'd be able to edit it right in line there.
You can edit it right in the Google. It'll show up with the little blue W so you know. And the trick is then when you're done editing it and you want to share it, you can't use the big blue share button. Because if you use that, it'll ask you if you want to convert it. And you don't really want to convert it. So you're going to close this and go back and just use the little guy on the top, the head with the plus sign next to it, instead of the big blue button. And you can, sorry, you can't see it here. I shouldn't have practiced with my fake document before. But then you can just share it to the person and you don't have to convert it. So you've opened it, and you've worked in it, and you've reshared it back to that person or any other person, all without even opening any Microsoft products. And it still is a Microsoft document for them.
Cool. So did you just stumble on this by yourself, or did you see a blog post or something?
I learned it from, there is a YouTube channel that I belong to with two people who are always talking about Google, new things in Google.
Okay.
And I ran across it there, and I shared it at a couple conferences, and I just think it's, especially if you work in an environment where, you know, half the place does a Microsoft and the other half doesn't, it comes in pretty handy.
Yeah, just a quick edit. Yeah, I suppose you wouldn't want to do any serious serious wordsmithing with documents, with images and such, but
I've just tried it in documents. I haven't tried it in any, you know, any other product.
Cool. Give it a shot. Thank you, Gail.
Yeah.
Sally.
My turn.
Oh, yeah, let me get out of here.
And my pick of the week is actually from my Black Friday shopping experience. Nobody else on the panel apparently does Black Friday shopping, but I had to get out there and get a deal, and I was actually at Office Depot. I was down in the South where there weren't that many options for shopping, but I found a deal at Office Depot. It's a Targus 4400 Power Pack, and it basically charges up, and then it will charge two of your devices fully. And they can be charged simultaneously. There's two USB ports on the device, and you can plug in a couple of your devices and charge them back fully before you drain the device. And this came in handy when I was trapped in a car for 20 hours straight. And we have all manner of charging our devices in this vehicle. We have three different cigarette lighter kind of ports, but we have five people and we all fight over those ports to keep our devices charged. So me, I just pulled out my little leather goodie and plugged in my device there, and in just no time at all, it was charged back up. So
that's a lot of battery power there, 4,400 milliamps. That could charge a couple of cell phones and half an iPad that way. So how big is it, Sally?
It's about that big, like a 4x6 picture, probably, I guess, and maybe maybe 3/4 of an inch deep, not a full inch, I don't think. But didn't get hot or anything like that. I paid all of $10 for it on Black Friday.
That's
looks
the
like
best part. Yeah.
They're selling it now for $15 and the normal price is $30. So I'm guessing between now and Christmas it'll fluctuate and prices might drop back to that Black Friday price as well. But I thought it was a good $10 spend, especially when I was stranded in a speeding bullet down the highway for a really long time. So that's my pick.
A lot of people look at, kind of turn up their nose at Targus, think it's a, you know, kind of a discount brand, but I've had real good luck with Targus products. In fact, I use a bag from Targus right now for my laptop bag, and they make good quality products, and they seem to specialize in mobile computing type products like this, you know, like a laptop bag, that kind of stuff. So.
I'm happy with it so far. We'll see if it turns into a brick real soon, but right now it's working great.
Very good. All right. My turn, and mine is not a pick but a tip, and actually it's a kind of a two related tips, and it's a smartphone tip. And with these larger smartphone screens, one of the challenges that people have is trying to navigate them with one hand. And especially like the iPhone, where you don't have a lot of options as far as, you know, how to configure your screen. You can't have widgets and those kinds of things. And really, you can't even put the tiles where you want them and still have white space or blank space. So you kind of have to do some creative arranging. So my tip is for, especially if you want to use one-handed use, this is my home screen. And this is an iPhone 6, and it has the now has six rows of icons, four across. And it's really hard, even, you know, for a man-sized hand to get to the top, so I can't even really get to the top. And Apple's kind of accounted for that, so if you double-click on the little home screen, it'll drop the icons down so you can kind of reach them a little bit better. But I haven't found that to be overly useful. I think they call that reachability or something like that. I think they tried to get fancy with
highly technical term.
How they added, you know, made up their own term for the approach. But my tip is to actually put the icons that you use the most on the bottom, which is a little bit counterintuitive. A lot of people put the icons and the apps they use the most at the top. But if you actually put them at the bottom, and the way you have to do this is you have to actually fill the screen with icons, because if you don't do that, then they're going to kind of drift toward the top. So at my end, I'm not going to go through all the icons on my home screen, but you can see that at the bottom I got my calendar, I have OneNote, and those are two that I use all the time. I have the Wells mobile app and then the Bible app. So those are the four across the bottom. And then the next row, I've got my fitness apps, my podcatcher, so my podcast app, and Twitter. So those are the ones that I use the most, and then on up toward the top. This does a lot of, this helps me a lot where I don't have to really extend, and if I'm reaching toward the top, I maybe got to have two hands on it anyway. And, of course, at the very bottom, you've got your tray with the things that you use the most, the browser, your mail, your phone icon, and your messages, your iMessage. This really has helped kind of stabilize how I use the phone, because once you start really trying to reach your thumb all the way to the top, you really kind of run the risk of fumbling it and ultimately dropping the device, which is the last thing that you really want to do. My other tip is, and you notice that on my home screen I don't have any, one folder. I try and avoid folders wherever possible, because at least in iOS, Android's a little bit different. In iOS, when you open up a folder and pick one, obviously that's a double tap, or you tap twice to get to your app. But what's really frustrating about iOS is that once you're done with the app, then that whole folder stays open, even if you don't want another app in that folder, so you have to physically close that or hit the home button. So there's two taps to come out of the app as well. So you've got enough real estate here now with these larger screen sizes where you really don't need to use folders, because a swipe is just as good. And if you've got your screens full of apps and your most used apps at the bottom, it's much easier to swipe than tap twice. And then you've got quick access to the bottom row of the next screen or the next screen. So I just find that that's a better model for navigating the apps on your phone, and especially for one-handed use, rather than trying to reach all over this larger screen. Try and nest those most used apps toward the bottom of each of those screens and then swipe across. So that's, for better or for worse, those are my little iPhone or iOS tips of the week. The same applies, I guess, for Android as well. So,
okay, so turn my world upside down now. I have to think backwards, and this is really messing with me. But I think we should have a show where we talk about what's in our system tray, because you said it's obvious what goes in your system tray. And my system tray is a little different than yours. And one thing that's in mine that's like my number one thing is my camera, and you didn't even mention that.
Oh, because when you swipe up, you have the camera right there.
Yeah. And it's on your home screen, too, even without logging in. But you're right.
That's true. That's true.
Oh, so, Mr. Productivity.
I don't have the flashlight there, the calculator, or my clock, which I use all of those. But I can do a quick swipe up, and they're right there. So
I also learned, since we're talking iOS tips, to put it in airplane mode while you're speeding down the highway if you don't want to burn up your battery.
Yep.
Because that used to be in on Wi-Fi.
That signal. Yeah.
Yeah. It really made a difference to my battery life to just be on cellular. So.
Cool. Yeah. All right. So let's close that segment out of our show, our tips and picks. If you've got feedback for any of those, or you'd like to offer your own, please do so. Go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, offer a comment or one of the many social networks that we're involved with, and offer your own pick of the week. We'd be really happy to share that. So, Sally, a couple of things on our Wells Insider section.
That's right, Martin. It is concert season, lucky for us. This coming weekend, Saturday, January 6th, wow, it says January. It should say December 6th and December 7th. There'll be Christmas concerts at Martin Luther College, and you can turn on the MLC Streams page. We'll have a link in the show notes to find those special services. You don't want to miss those. Saturday night at 7:30 p.m., Sunday at 4 p.m., all Central Time. And then the following weekend, the same will be true for the Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary Christmas concert over on the Wells Live page. So links in the show notes, just wonderful events. Maybe you just want to turn them on while you're decorating or something like that, cooking Christmas cookies, whatever it is. Just a great way to enliven and uplift your Christmas Advent, Christmas celebration.
Need to know section. A couple of events, and we've been talking about these for months now, but we don't want you to forget them. Final Web for Dummies class. The best trainer that we have on staff we're putting on this job.
You had a hard time getting that out, but
our own Sally Draper is going to be doing 3 days of training on Final Web, January 21st, 22nd, 23rd, beginner, intermediate, and advanced. So if you just want to grab one of those classes, you can do that, or do all three. It's a little bit cheaper. They run online only, so we're not doing an in-person class for this, but it's 9 to 4 with a lunch break in the middle there. $49 per day, $129 for all 3 days. If you'd like to learn a little bit more about some of the topics that are included there, bit.ly/FW training info will get you everything that you need to know. Please do hurry over there and sign up if you are interested, because we do have limited seats available. And FinalWeb is one of those tools that a lot of congregations are using, and the tool has changed significantly in the past year. So if you haven't looked at it lately, and now you've been thrust into the responsibility of maintaining that, this would be the class for you.
We also want to remind people that we have a little conference coming up next summer, July 9th through 11th. We invite you all to join us for the party. It's called Wells Tech Conference 2015. It'll be happening at Country Springs Hotel and Conference Center in Waukesha, Wisconsin. And Martin, I'm really looking forward to being there with you and with all our Wells Tech community as we learn together about using technology to enhance our ministry efforts. And we've got 3 full days planned. The first day will be pre-conference workshops, and these are more hands-on, intense, specific topics that we're going to be offering. And then 2 full days of conference with not one, not two, but 10 different breakout sessions. So you can learn all kinds of different things from a huge variety of speakers that are going to be there. So
you actually have to pick one of the 10, but they are repeated once.
So that's right.
You get a shot at something that's really of interest to you. So
yeah. Looking forward to it. You can learn more at wells.net/wellstechconf. And if you head on over to the website, there's a place for you to give us your name and email address, and we'll let you know when the registration is open at the beginning of February is what we're targeting for registration to start. So please join us.
Yep, we'd love to have you. I'm really looking forward to that. Let's move on to our community feedback section.
And a couple of things that were shared with us this week via our DIGO group, and you can go over there and tag things yourself if you join the group. One was an article, this is from Randy Nepson, and it's called How to Insert Google Calendar, iCal, and Outlook Event Invites into Your Marketing Emails. And I thought this was really slick. I'm going to scroll down the page. Those of you that are watching online, don't get car sick, but if you go all the way to the bottom, they show an example where it says, save this event to your calendar, and it provides a link to Outlook, iCal, and Google Calendar. And this doesn't just happen automatically for you folks. You have to actually generate these links, and this blog post walks you step by step through all 3 and how to generate the links, how to add them to your own calendar, and then make a link to them so that people can add them easily when you're sending out your marketing emails. So I think this is definitely worth tucking away in your tool belt if you're trying to get people to come to your events.
Yeah, I like the approach when people do that to me if I'm planning on attending something. It just saves a step where I can just click a link and it automatically adds it versus trying to remember what the time was, do a cut and paste or whatever. So
definitely. All right.
Thank you, Randy, for sharing that. Appreciate that.
A couple of links from our friend Jason Schmidt. Jason wrote that he was able to replace a part on his 3D printer. He says you can have someone, preferably you can print the part in advance before it breaks on your 3D printer.
Yeah.
But apparently he has a friend who helped him out.
That'll be the true test if your 3D printer can print a 3D printer.
Yeah. Well, apparently it can print parts for it. It's just that you have to figure that out before the parts break, and that was Jason's lesson for us. But this is a particular part that he needed, a dual extruder for his 3D printer, and he was able to get someone to print it for him and replace it on his printer. So
amazing.
I thought that was pretty interesting.
Gail, have you ever seen a 3D printer?
I have not.
I have not either.
That was part of our entertainment as we flew down the highway. My husband was reading all about them and pricing them. Who knows what's in our future.
Okay.
Anyway, one more link from our friend Jason. This to Intel's Teach Elements online professional development courses for engaging and exploring 21st century learning concepts. These look to be really well done, cover a variety of topics, and are free. So if you're looking for some professional development for your K-12 staff, these might be worth checking out. They have moving into mobile learning, designing blended learning, assessment in the 21st century classroom, thinking critically with data, collaboration, educational leadership, project-based approaches, all different topics. And you can look at a course syllabus. You can actually launch the course where it, you know, takes you into a learning environment, kind of walks you through the course topic that they prepared for you.
That looks cool and well done, yeah.
Yeah, lots of good stuff here. So check out the link in the show notes, and thanks, Jason, for sharing that.
Wonderful. If you'd like to contribute, I already mentioned the show notes page, but and Sally mentioned that Randy and Jason shared via Digo, but Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Google+ are all areas that we monitor, and if you've got something to share, that we would really welcome you doing that. So don't keep it to yourself. Share with the class. Next week, we return to our book discussion, What's Best Next, Part 3, titled Define, Know What's Most Important. So if you're following along at home, you may want to pull that out. Part 3 is what's on deck for next week. What's Best Next is, I don't know how you describe it, it's a productivity book, but I'd almost call it, Sally, a stewardship book, where you're really trying to put together motivation for Christian living and how that translates into how you pick what you do each day. And that's kind of what the book's about.
Right. And he's given us a lot of good information we've covered in previous podcasts. This next one gets to be more hands-on, where you're actually looking at your mission and vision and things like that. So I actually broke out my Google Doc and wrote some things down as he was walking me through how to write a mission statement and things. So hopefully those that are reading along will go through that exercise as well.
Okay. Sally, we do have a featured video this week. Looks like something from Brian Davison and the gang at Koine.
That's right. I was thinking along those lines of Christmas concerts, and I found an archived Christmas concert that Koine had done several years back now. It's called Christmas is Forgiving, and I think it's, like I said, maybe 2008 circa or something like that, but I bet you the music's still good. I played a little of it myself, and I think it would be good to turn on while you're decorating or whatever you'd want to do. It's a lovely service that they did several years back. So
very good. Thanks, Sally and Gail, for your contributions this week. I really enjoyed the conversation. Hopefully our viewers, our listeners did as well. If you'd like to join us live, you can do that each week, because we try fairly religiously to do this Tuesday, 4:00 Central. If you go to wellstechlive.wells.net, that's the place where the Hangout lives. And the advantage of watching live is you can contribute or ask a question right during the show. There's a Q&A section there where you can contribute your own thoughts or ask a question, and we'll try to address them. So if that fits into your schedule, Tuesdays, 4:00 Central, wellstechlive.wells.net. Gail, thanks so much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
And blessings on your holiday preparations, and have a blessed Christmas.
Thank you. You guys and, too, and everyone else.
Blessings to everybody else as well, and we'll talk to you next week.